You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS.
I have something to say, actually. I was watching...
To open up the episode, I have something to say.
So, before we record via FaceTime, essentially, every week, Tariq and I have to do our claps when we go to edit the episodes, we can align our audio recordings in the right place so, you know, that our conversation matches up. And the other day, I was watching, just for funsies, season 19 of Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I thought it was off the air. No, reruns.
No, season 19. It's like the latest season. It just
the last
finished.
One. Must the, last be the last season. Season.
Yeah, recently aired. And they were like filming still in quarantine. And so they had to like set up their own tripods and ring lights and stuff at home. And when they would go to record things on Zoom calls, they would have to clap. They'd be like, 1, 2, 3, clap. And I was like, oh my gosh, Tariq, we're the Kardashians.
I think people know, like, if you've listened to season one at least, like, we love. I used to watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians with my roommate in undergrad every day, like with dinner time. Like, that's what we put on. Or we'd watch that, or we'd watch The OC. Or One Tree Hill.
Keeping Up with the
Kardashians. But that's the thing. It's like, it's not real. That's why it's like, it's not a real show. It's just like a drama, like One Tree Hill or...
It is.
Or, The OC. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like a Kardashian fan, like, you know what I mean? I'm not like, oh my god, I love you, Kim.
Yeah.
But it is pure entertainment, and I get looks from friends and things like that when I say, oh, I was watching the Kardashians. People look at me like, are you all right? But it's literally like, just I can zone out. Excuse me. I can zone out. I can just like not think and just literally laugh at the drama. Yeah.
That's why, like, Grey's Anatomy has been on for, what, like, 19 seasons as well or something like that? Or, like, Days of Our Lives is on its, like, I don't know, 30th year. I'm making that up. But, like, long, like, running shows, like, dramas. And that's exactly what Keeping Up with the Kardashians was.
Totally. I agree. Anyway, so I felt like when we were doing our claps, I was like, I am Kris Jenner.
Their family. Right now. Yeah. Bible. Okay. Hannah... You already know one of these answers.
Yes.
What are the two worst things in the world? You can answer one of them.
So the first one, which is the first thing that came to my mind when you initially asked me this, was loud chewers.
Exactly. So for people who don't know, Hannah and I have self-diagnosed ourselves with misophonia, which is a condition wherein people don't like certain sounds. And most of the time, those sounds are associated with human action.
Yeah.
So like a clicking of a pen or the stomping of a foot or loud chewing. My least favorite one is not chewing, but it's drinking. And then someone goes, my blood pressure rises 50 points immediately. And I'm actually enraged. And I was reading up about it, and I guess, like, it's the research is, like, really early or whatever, and apparently it starts when you're really young most of the time, and it's more prevalent in women or young girls. And oftentimes, it can be specific to, or it at least starts with, close family members.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really true.
Oh, I lost you. But I swear, like, my family... they can attest to this. Like, I get seriously angry when...
Yeah.
And since I... Like, this dates back to me being a teenager. Like, I'd be at the dinner table and I would lose my appetite and get so, like, uptight and moody because I could hear them chewing their food. Yeah. Or, like, my poor dad. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but if he does, hey, Dad. My dad, like, eating a bagel... and, like, licking the peanut butter off his fingers.
Oh.
Or like even the other, not that long ago, I was home at my parents' house and we were trying to watch a movie.
Yeah.
And my dad was eating peanuts. I think I told you this. And like,
oh yeah, yeah.
My poor innocent father's just sitting there trying to like mind his business, eating his peanuts, and I am raging on the couch. Like I am just sitting there, fist clenched. Like, oh, I was so mad. I couldn't focus on the movie, and it's just like, I don't know why. I can't control it.
But we've talked about this before where like we know it's not nice of us. Like we know this it's not nice of us to be mad at these people for doing something completely normal.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel bad about it too. And the thing that like here's the flip side of it is I think those people can't control it either. Like just how we can't control how we feel about it.
You're right.
It's like hard for them to also stop making those noises. So Thomas will drink something, go like, and look at me. And when he looks at me, I'm fire in my eyes back at him. Like I'm moving out in that moment. It's so awful. Okay. The second worst thing in the world.
Oh yeah.
Again,
oh, yeah.
I'm being totally sarcastic, super hyperbolic. I'm exaggerating, being dramatic. The second worst thing in the world, and I don't really want to talk about this for a long time. I just want to say it.
Okay.
Finding the unsubscribe button on emails, like promotional emails.
Oh, my God. And they really hide
sometimes
that.
Sometimes they don't even underline it. Yeah, sometimes it's not underlined. It's not bold. You can't tell it's a link.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, you're so right. Businesses are so sneaky like that. And then I find when you do find the unsubscribe button and you click it, then it takes you to a page that, like, tricks you into resubscribing sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Like, you're not sure you want to leave, right?
Right. And then, like
if you say yes, then it's like you stay subscribed.
Right. Or, like, it'll say, thank you for unsubscribing. Or, like, we're sorry to see you go. And then it's like, didn't mean to? Click here to confirm resubscription. So then you click confirm.
Is that supposed to make me sad that they say we're sorry to see you go?
But like, then you end up clicking confirm because you think that you're confirming the unsubscription.
Right.
But you're actually resubscribing so you continue to get emails. Oh my God, it drives me crazy.
Absolutely. Also, if you're going to send me promotional emails, you want me to keep them, send me a discount code. Don't just send like whatever. We have like these new products. Send me a code. Maybe I'll keep the email.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone who listens is obviously in product marketing, and this is for you.
Totally.
Love you guys. Hannah, I would love to ask you a question.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. What do you want to know?
Oh, that's super weird. I don't know. Just like, okay, I'm kind of embarrassed now, but do you have a BS of the week? I don't know.
You know what? I think I do, actually. Funny
this
that
one
you
time?
Ask.
Yeah. Okay.
I came across some pretty interesting BS on social media this week. So here I was scrolling my social media feeds and I come across... Minding my business, you know. And I come across this video of this woman saying... I'm paraphrasing what she said. But she basically goes, I know. Everyone keeps asking, what is this product that you keep seeing on your Explore page? And she goes, well, it's the product that helped me lose over 100 pounds. And she goes, what is it? Well, you can message me about it, but it's going to break down your visceral fat, give you amazing skin, amazing eyelashes. It is just so amazing, and you need it. And then she, like, pours...
She's like, sorry about it. Like, if you message me about it, sorry. This amazing stuff is going to happen to you.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right, exactly. And then, so she pours this, like, goopy pink, like, almost Pepto-Bismol-looking substance into, like, this giant... like almost ladle spoon. It was like a small ladle, but a large spoon. And she like pours it in and she like takes a gulp of it and she goes, oh, it tastes like pudding.
Okay.
So anyways, I was like, what is that? I need to know what this is. Yeah. So I do some scrolling through the comments on that video and I see some people commenting that it's a product from, and I don't know if you've heard of this before, if anyone listening has, but it's a product from a company called Modair.
No.
Do you have, does that, like, does the name even give you any sort of, like, hints as to what the company might be, or...
It sounds like cosmetological stuff, like Moder, like right. hair shampoo or something.
So to me, it sounds like, and it is, like a, an MLM, or like a multi-level marketing company.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, like Arbonne, Moder, you know?
Exactly.
So I see that, and then I you know, I look up Moder, and I find out that this specific product that this person is referring to is a product called Moder Trim. So, trim. Hmm.
Okay, great. Yeah. Congrats.
So, I take a little peruse on the Moder website, and the first thing I see on the Moder Trim page is, in big letters, awarded best weight management product. Cool. Like,
okay. From who?
By who? Exactly.
Yeah.
There's no indication as to, like, where that award came from.
Yeah,
so that
yeah.
was, like, kind of the number one. Okay. And then I keep reading, and this is what the product description or the claims about the product are. So it says, Moder Trim features an innovative, first-in-the-world combination. I just can't even not laugh. First-in-the-world combination of two leading technologies for a body transformation experience.
Okay.
CLA to accelerate fat reduction, and you're going to roll your eyes, collagen/HA matrix technology to improve muscle tone and restore youthful skin. And then it goes on to say, plant-derived CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, has been clinically shown to decrease body fat. CLA not only supports fat metabolism, it actually helps block fat transport from the bloodstream into fat cells. And then it goes on, multi-patented award-winning collagen HA matrix technology replenishes collagen and HA, hyaluronic acid, levels in a highly absorbable form, restoring youthful-looking skin and supporting joint and muscle fitness. And all of those claims have little asterisks beside them. So I scroll down to the... Like,
they're not true.
Right.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
But before you keep going, this is so, like, history is repeating itself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, none of this stuff is new. They're saying new technologies or whatever.
No.
It's all old stuff that we know doesn't work.
Yeah.
And they're talking about it as if it's some, like, innovative whatever, like, newfangled thing.
Oh, exactly.
Anyway, sorry.
Keep going. That's the diet industry wrapped. You just summarized the diet industry.
Yeah.
They're just repurposing old... like compounds or products that we know don't work, and they're like branding them as innovative, first in the world, or like combining them together to make this new supposedly transformative product. But anyways,
I want a transformation. I want to like grow wings. You know what I mean? If you're branding a transformation, like give me horns.
Oh my God. I know.
Give me an extra pair of legs.
Totally.
That's the kind of transformation I want.
I agree. No. So, I scrolled down to like the fine print where the asterisks were, and it says, this is what it says. It says, results not typical. The average person can experience a more sculpted, leaner body due to fat reduction, which may or may not translate to weight loss, depending on a variety of factors, including the amount of exercise and motivation to stick to a reduced calorie diet.
Wow. Cool.
So there you have it, friends. If you're not...
You know what? They're right.
They're right. Yeah. If you're not eating in a calorie deficit while taking this product, you will not lose weight. So they're telling you up front that this product doesn't work. You need to eat in a calorie deficit to lose weight.
A+.
Yeah, totally. And then the last little fine print says, these statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose...
Because they don't need to be, because these are old compounds that are already on the market.
Yeah, I know. So also, but this is the thing that blew my mind a little bit. One 450 milliliter bottle of Moder Trim is $100.
That was what I was going to ask you next.
Yeah.
How much does it cost?
And they recommend that you take one tablespoon per day. So one tablespoon, 15 mils. How long is it going to take you to get through a 450 mil bottle? 30 days. One month. So you're going to spend $100 a month on this bottle of goop to supposedly...
I'm assuming it's like in... Oh, like I'm assuming there's more than one influencer than this, like... Like more than one MLM person on Instagram promoting this.
Totally.
Stuff.
That's what MLM, I mean, this BS of the Week isn't about MLMs or, yeah, multi-level marketing companies, but that's essentially what they do is they recruit women, really, to buy and then sell these products to their followings or their communities. And that's kind of like a huge, this is the one thing I'll say about MLMs. Like, that's the biggest like kicker for me, or like the biggest red flag, is that the people that they get to talk about these things are just like everyday people. They have no credentials. They have no background knowledge in nutrition or health or fitness. And they're selling these compounds or these products and like saying, oh, they're supported by science. They're backed by science. And so obviously the person who doesn't know any better, their neighbor, their friend, their mom is going to believe them because they, you know, they feel like they're well-intentioned, which I'm sure they are. But
yeah, anyways, it's new. It's not like the old stuff, whatever.
Right, right. So just to give a little background on, I thought I would just cover CLA a little bit. I just did a little bit of research on it. I didn't go too in-depth. But so CLA, like it mentioned, is conjugated linoleic acid. So that is a, it's an isomer of linoleic acid, or omega-6 fatty acid. So a little throwback to chemistry class, if you guys don't know what an isomer is, it's basically molecules with identical molecular formulas. So the same amount of atoms, tell me if I'm saying this right, same amount of atoms in each element, but the arrangements of the atoms are different. So they don't necessarily have the same like properties or functions.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So foods like beef, milk, veal, butter, and certain oils like canola oil or I think safflower oil have high amounts of this CLA. And I believe in, just let me see here, in the Modere Trim product, they use, safflower oil as the source of conjugated linoleic acid. So, yeah, like you already said, this CLA isn't a new thing. It's, you know, it has gained some popularity in the last 10 years or so, but it's been around, and it's popular because there, you know, there is some research and some beneficial effects in like cell and animal studies around certain effects like anti-carcinogenic effects, anti-hypertensive effects, anti-diabetic effects, and even some effects that fight against metabolic syndrome. So that's kind of where some of these claims are coming from. So I looked into it a little more, and there is, you know, a very limited number of randomized controlled trials in humans that have shown any sort of benefit relating to weight loss, like their Modere is claiming. And really, the randomized controlled trials that have seen weight loss have seen such a small amount of weight loss that it's not, you know, clinically significant or anything like that.
Sure.
I think it's like, from what I read, as small as like 1 kilogram over 6 months of weight loss.
And like we would expect that kilogram would likely be gained back on average.
Totally. And also, is that really worth it? If, you know, 1 kilogram, so like 2 pounds essentially over 6 months, and you to take that product for 6 months, you have to spend around $600.
Yeah.
So is that really worth it? Like to lose 2 pounds in 6 months. So basically, I mean, that's as far as I got. And I will just read off something from Penn Nutrition, which is practice-based evidence in nutrition. It's I've told you about it before, Tarek, but it's like it's a platform for nutrition professionals where you can really look up any topic like CLA and get a very recent summary of evidence supporting or not supporting that product. So the summary from Penn that I got says, although there is a range of promising health effects of the various isomers demonstrated in cell, tissue, and animal models, there is still insufficient data to define the dose, isomer, or the form in which to consume CLA, and the population or patient group to whom it would benefit. At this time, there's insufficient data or research to recommend it for use.
I'm going to get that tattooed, that sentence that you just said.
Seriously, same. So really, that's a summary of CLA. You know, there's not enough evidence to show that it's going to help you lose weight. And the evidence that does exist, the weight loss is so tiny that, you know, it's not worth spending so much money on it. And The company even claims, like, you're not going to lose weight on this product alone. You have to combine it with physical activity and a caloric deficit. And those are the things we know that result in weight loss.
And guess what? If you do that without the product, you're still going to lose weight.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last thing, just about the collagen that's in there. I mean, we've talked about collagen before, and
I know. And boy, I love Jennifer Aniston, but her Instagram, she has like 23 million followers or something.
Oh, she,
her Instagram's all collagen.
She recently like became, I don't know if she invested in or she's like a part owner of Vital Proteins collagen now.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, so that's probably why. Anyways, so yeah, there's no evidence to support taking collagen for weight loss, among all of the other things. You know, the research we've already talked about on collagen is so limited, and there's a lot of limitations to the research that we do have. It's not great. Right. Yeah. So anyways. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much. Wow.
Oh, you're so welcome. Madeira. Yeah.
We're not sponsored by them. I don't know if anyone's surprised to hear that, but we haven't been sponsored by them yet. We're waiting for an email. But yeah, you're right. This is just like, I don't know. I hate that it's such a big money grab, too. I mean, obviously, like, if they make it $2, people are going to be like, that thing doesn't work. But because it's priced so highly, some people might think, like, oh, wow, I'm really going to benefit from this. It costs a lot of money.
Well, and the thing I find about a lot of these companies is that you're basically encouraged to overhaul your entire, like, life with their products. So it wouldn't just be like the Modere trim. You'd also be like,
right,
buy the Modere, I don't know, like protein powder, or buy them, I don't know if they actually have protein powder, but buy the Modere cream, or like, you know, you're like encouraged to swap everything out for all of these products. So you probably end up spending more than just 100, probably hundreds, if not like thousands a month on these products.
If you were a loyal purchaser of their products.
Yeah. So, yeah, a bit of an eye roll, but it felt good to
another wonderful BS of debunk. The week to add to the list.
Yeah,
thank you so much. That was
thank you.
Skillfully debunked. Skillfully.
Oh wow, wow! I'm blushing,
Hannah. It's that time of year.
I know.
Don't you think?
Isn't it crazy? Yeah.
It's that time of year. The year's coming to an end. So sad that 2020 is ending. Really going to miss that year.
Oh my God. Like, I wish 2020 could stick around forever. I loved it so much.
I can't even joke
about
that.
I am just living it up here. I am thriving.
Surviving and thriving. 2020 is thankfully on its way out the door.
Yeah.
And so we kind of talked about this a little bit, but we didn't talk about it too much. But, you know, this is a time when people make New Year's resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really get into this personally, but I never make a New Year's resolution.
Oh, okay.
Because I just feel like I start things all the time. So I'm like constantly like, oh, I really want to do this.
Right.
Like, I don't know, start like studying at this time of day, like reading this specific book this many times a day, like throughout the year anyway. So it doesn't feel like a very exciting time of the year for me, but it really is for a lot of people. I'm really interested to get into this topic with you because I know you're going to approach it from a very nutritional perspective. I will be a little bit, or maybe not. Oh,
surprise. No, it will be. And, yeah.
Okay. I will too a little bit, but I also, I kind of got interested in the psychological aspect of making New Year's resolutions and goal setting in general. And I'm really excited to share some like goal setting research and how that might interact with forming New Year's resolutions about our health.
Oh, I love that. So, I mean, I'll say that you guys probably know me by now. Like I've talked about in a recent episode how I like am, you know, a sucker for like self-help motivational stuff. Right. So I really like sitting down like around the new year and
bullet journaling,
setting out goals, like making my journal all pretty. I love that stuff. It just like makes me feel,
it's very meditative.
Yeah, it's totally meditative. Exactly. It makes me feel calm. Yeah. It makes me feel organized.
Centers
it makes me feel
you.
Motivated. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I don't think there's whichever you know, side you lean more towards, like you, you know, not setting goals at the new year because you're kind of constantly doing it all year, yeah. or setting some big goals at the start of the year. I don't think either one is wrong or right. And there's definitely nothing wrong whenever you do it with making plans or making goals or aspirations, for, you know, the days or the months or whatever ahead. But I will say that at the new year, because it is, you know, it's a popular time to set goals, and there's, you know, New Year's resolutions have existed for, I don't know, as long as I've been alive.
Yeah.
I mean,
we call it the new year. So, like, it's in the name, it's, like, intrinsic. It's, like, a new beginning, right?
Totally.
So it's a time.
Exactly. It's a new, yeah, it's a fresh start for some people. I do find that a lot of, obviously, you know, the messaging around New Year's and setting goals gets really clouded by diet culture and diet messaging. And, you know, we end up setting a lot of times, and I've been like terribly guilty of this in the past, of setting really unrealistic, unobtainable image-based goals. And, you know, a lot of times it's not our own fault. It's just the pressure that we receive from everything around us to, all right, it's the new year, time to get in shape, time to lose that 10 pounds.
Well, that's the big joke, right, is like the busiest month of the year in the gym in January. Like, don't go to the gym in January because everyone else is there.
Yeah, and I can only imagine, you know, going into 2021, how much messaging there's going to be around, you know, shedding the COVID weight or the quarantine 15 or getting back in shape after, you know, the worst year ever or what, you know what I mean? Like,
Totally.
So I think that I absolutely love what you're bringing to the table today and what you want to talk about. And I do, like you said, I am going to talk about some nutrition related things, but more so I want to just emphasize setting goals or resolutions in more of a non-diet way. So I just have some examples that I wrote out of some, like, if you're looking for something to work on in 2021, I've got some examples. So I think it'll be good.
I kind of wanted to start with a little bit of an overview, maybe.
Totally.
And then we can kind of go back and forth.
Yeah.
So one of the things I was interested in with respect to New Year's resolution research was how people make New Year's resolution goals. So one of the first papers I read was from this year, Making New Year's Resolutions That Stick, Exploring How Superordinate and Subordinate Goals Motivate Goal Pursuit. And I wonder if your examples are going to kind of fit in with the messaging
we'll
of this paper. So this is like, it's something that's like maybe kind of obvious, but that maybe we don't think about enough, or maybe we don't realize it until it's pointed out to us. But making superordinate or really lofty resolutions doesn't seem to work. So saying like, I want to be healthy, that's my New Year's resolution. That's a really general goal, right? And oftentimes we also have to make, and I'm sure you're going to get into this, smaller, or give us examples, smaller achievable goals, which are called subordinate goals. These are, you know, instead of saying, I'm going to get healthy, you're going to say, I'm going to make specific decisions around reducing added sugar in my diet, for example. Not like totally cutting it out, because that's not realistic.
Yeah,
it's something
totally.
I enjoy, and I love junk food, whatever's claimed to be junk food or labeled as junk food, but I'm going to reduce added sugar. So that's a more smaller achievable goal than just saying, I want to be healthy. So there is a little bit of research around what works and what doesn't work. And obviously the superordinate, or those really lofty goals, are the ones that often don't work on their own. So it's thought that it's helpful to have both. So as you're achieving those subordinate or those smaller achievable goals, you're getting a little bit more motivation because you can kind of like tick off boxes and say like, yeah, I did this like one small goal. Like I increased movement in my day by walking for 20 minutes, whereas normally I wouldn't. Instead of just saying, I want to walk more, say like, I'm going to walk 20 minutes every other day or every day or something. That's a more achievable thing that you can tick off the box, for example, and you gain more motivation that way. But having that lofty goal of, I want to increase movement in my life, is also good to have, because as you're ticking off that subordinate goal, you're thinking about the larger goal in mind. So you have an end point that you want to reach, at least, or a theoretical one. and you're climbing that mountain to reach it. You're not just, mm-hmm. if you just have subordinate goals and no superordinate ones, you're just like climbing a mountain to nowhere.
Yeah, it's like, what are you working towards? Yeah.
Exactly. So in that case, when you have both subordinate and superordinate goals, it's thought that you're less likely to experience burnout or apathy, which I thought was pretty interesting. Again, like, seems kind of obvious, but not something that I would have necessarily thought of unless it was pointed out to me. I'm kind of wondering how, maybe if you want to give some of your examples, I'm kind of wondering how yours have been set up.
Yeah, so I actually really like that. And I think I would, I mean, it makes sense to me that that's, you know, what they're saying, because usually when if I were to talk about goals or things that clients of mine can do or whatever, if they were to say, oh, well, I want to get healthy, it's like,
what does that mean?
Exactly. What does that even mean? You really have to kind of narrow things down. And I like to focus, you know, specifically on certain habits that you can focus on. So that's like what you said, the subordinate
goals. Subordinate. Yeah. The smaller goals.
But then I also, I mean, I do appreciate that you still have that. What's the other one?
Superordinate
goal, almost like in the back of your mind or still in mind, mm-hmm. Say like your small habit that you want to work on is like preparing, I don't know, your breakfast the night before so that you have like a nourishing breakfast to grab in the morning and go, or else you would skip it. So as you continue on with that subordinate goal of prepping your breakfast ahead of time or whatever it is, like you said, you're kind of ticking things off and it's making you feel healthier. It's making you feel you are kind of inching towards that superordinate goal of getting healthy.
You feel like you've accomplished something.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that
how do you measure I'm healthier today?
Totally.
Without having something specific.
I think that's what a lot of people run into when they set New Year's resolutions is like, I'm going to do this big thing. I'm going to lose 50 pounds or I'm going to like...
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm just
going
to eat healthy and go to the gym.
I'm going to eat healthy. And it's like, what does eating healthy mean? You have to start somewhere and like make small little habit changes. So whether that's having breakfast or whether that's adding more vegetables to your plate every day or little things like that.
Maybe this is a good time to tell people, like, if you are kind of lost, like, seek out a dietitian or get a referral to a dietitian from your family physician, because they're people who are really... You get qualified to help you make those goals.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're trained to help support people in making like nutrition related and health related goals. So I can share a few of the things that I wrote down that are kind of, you know, shifting away from really diet focused, like not necessarily nutrition focused, but shifting away from like, I'm going to go on this diet or I'm going to cut out X, Y, and Z or I'm going to whatever. So the first one I thought that was a nice, I would say it's kind of like in between subordinate and superordinate, but it's like, rather than, having something that you're going to do every day. So like, I'm going to work out every day or I'm going to eat, I don't know, so many servings of vegetables every day. You could say, I'm going to make time for daily self-care. So what I like about that is that self-care could mean something different every day. So it's not something that's going to get really monotonous or like dreadful because you're not going to be forced to do the exact same thing every day. Because even if you say, I'm going to eat a salad with dinner every night, like that's going to get really probably boring after like a month. You're not going to want to have, you know, your same bowl of salad every night with your dinner. So if you say, I'm going to make time for daily self-care, some days that could mean, you know, eating extra vegetables. Some days that could mean resting. Some days it could mean exercising. You know what I mean? So it's like you're it's a small thing that you do every day for your health. And you can switch it up and do something different based on what you feel you need each day of the year. So I think that, does that make sense when I say it's kind of in between?
Totally.
Because it's not super specific. But it's...
I do know what you mean, yeah.
It's not
a
big...
You could have like smaller... goals underneath that one, but it's definitely, it's not the same as saying like, I'm going to be healthy. It's more specific than that. Yeah.
And you know, I like that actually, that you could have smaller things kind of within it. You could almost make, if that was your goal, you could almost make a list of some examples of daily self-care that you could carry out depending on the day. So just things that you like to do that make you feel good or that you know will make you feel good after you do that. Yeah. So that's the first one that I had. The next one, more food related that I had is, again, I think this could go in line with, like something like if your big goal or your superordinate goal was like getting healthy or eating healthier, something that a more subordinate goal that could go with that is trying new foods or eating a wider variety of foods.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of making this big commitment to no fast food or no carbs or whatever, why don't you instead focus on adding more nutritious foods and sometimes non-nutritious foods, whatever, that you're not as familiar with. So try cooking things in a different way or just pick up a vegetable at the grocery store that you've never cooked with before, prepared or eaten. So this opens up your experiences with food. It allows you to experiment and have fun and add variety to your diet because really, you know, we know that variety is a key to a healthy, balanced diet, eating a bunch of different things that are going to contribute to, you know, meeting your nutrient needs every day. So that's kind of a, you know, moving away from more diet related focus onto diet as in like cutting out things, onto, what can we add in and still work like towards that healthy eating goal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What else do I have here? So another one, this is probably a subordinate goal. Maybe tell me what you think, but like diversifying your social media feeds.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I think that's pretty subordinate because maybe the superordinate one would be like, I don't know, decolonize your life.
Yeah.
Which is like really, totally. Really broad.
Yeah. It could be around.
And has been like totally like gentrified to mean like so many different things.
Exactly.
But there's more specific things you can do that are more in line with diversifying your circle, your like social circle, for example, even your one online.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you're so right. It could be around, like you said, decolonizing your life or even it can contribute if you want to work on your mental health this year, you know, what you consume on social media can affect that as well. So yeah, you can do a lot for, like you said, a lot of different things by diversifying your social media feed. So yeah, like unfollow or block or even report things that you don't like or make you feel bad about yourself. And likewise, follow a diverse range of accounts that show all sorts of body shapes and sizes, different genders and abilities, races, cultures. Yeah, and share them too. You're so good at that.
Because we've talked about how we need to not just like see those like anti-fatphobic messages, but we need to promote them because we need to be like flooding social media with positive messages rather than just reducing the negative ones.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. So while you're not only taking care of yourself by diversifying your social media feeds, you're also, you know, doing a good thing by spreading more positive messaging.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So those are probably the three top ones I had.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. After I was reading a little bit about like general resolution making, specifically around New Year's resolutions, I was really interested in how diet culture affects resolution making.
Oh my
New
God.
Year's resolution making specifically. So I have this paper here that I really enjoyed reading. It's not about food, but I'm going to get to more food stuff after it. It was kind of a door opener to something I didn't expect to see.
Okay.
So this paper is from 2000. It's called Cigarette Advertising to Counter New Year's Resolutions. And some of the researchers were from Lethbridge. So hello, Canada. So this paper was about how the food... So I kind of wanted... This ended up being like how the food and drug industry might be taking advantage of our New Year's resolutions and maybe... Like, this sounds, like, cynical, but sabotaging us.
Okay.
So when I was thinking about this, I thought, like, maybe I'm being neurotic. Like, that we're being sabotaged by diet culture specifically around our New Year's resolutions. But I actually think there's some evidence to it.
Okay.
So let's look at this paper. Like, it's about smoking, right? So quitting smoking, I don't know. I hope you probably agree, like, it's probably really popular New Year's resolution. I hear about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally.
It's one of those ones, just like getting healthy. Like, part of that is like some people who smoke want to quit smoking.
Yeah.
It's like all the power to them. Very hard thing to do. So when people quit smoking, or they quit, I guess, like really any substance, they can go through withdrawal. It's a really common outcome of quitting something addictive, especially. And withdrawal symptoms are not random, okay? They're predictable. They come at a certain time, most likely like shortly after when that substance use has stopped. It's not like you get withdrawal like 3 months later or something. Like, you get withdrawal pretty much like pretty quickly after mm-hmm. you stop using that whatever substance it is. So this is kind of an older paper, but it does introduce this idea of how possibly how marketing can sabotage our New Year's resolutions. So these researchers out of Canada found that in January and February, when people are most likely to be experiencing withdrawal symptoms from deciding to quit smoking, you know, as compared to the rest of the year, there was actually a higher rate of magazine ads for cigarettes, which I thought was pretty interesting. So I don't know, you'd think like cigarette ads are, I don't know, pretty much the same throughout the year. They're not. There's actually a higher number of ads for cigarettes earlier in the year. Of course, since 2000, there have been new laws enacted about advertising these kinds of things, right? So maybe this isn't something that's quite the same in 2020 or going into 2021, but I thought it was quite interesting. And maybe it applies to, you know, a wider array of things, maybe including diet culture. Mm-hmm. So these researchers concluded that cigarette marketers were attempting to, in their words, preempt quitting by cueing smoking behaviors. So these advertisements are cueing wanting a cigarette, right? So
Right. It's
kind of coming at the worst time because people are going through withdrawal. Okay, so that's smoking. People are listening. They're like, this has nothing to do with food. Okay, so let's talk about this other paper. So here's a more recent paper. Sorry, I actually don't have the date in front of me, and you can chastise me for that. But I think it's from this year. It's called New Year's Resolutions. It's actually called New Year's Res Illusions.
Okay.
Like an illusion. Food shopping in the new year competes with healthy intentions. Okay, so this is out of the University of Vermont. Okay, so what about food specifically? And with respect to our behaviors around the new year and the influence of, you know, the food industry on the success of our New Year's resolutions. And I think undoubtedly the market through advertising, you know, just like in cigarette smoking, plays a role in influencing our New Year's resolutions with respect to our health. And I think this paper provides some evidence for that. So this study specifically looked at grocery store shopping at a couple of grocery stores like near where the research was being done. And I think partly we might hypothesize that branding and marketing in these stores, or in any store really, influences people's decisions around the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I'm hypothesizing here, but I think there's good reason to think it. You know, specific seasonal items are coming out. There's certain sales that are drawing people to certain food products. I definitely fall for it. So during, what do they find? So during the holiday season, household food expenditure increased 15% compared to baseline. So baseline would be like during the year outside of December. It increased, what did I say? 15%. So it was like baseline was like baseline was $105. Yeah. So it increased like $121 on average. 75% of those additional expenditures. So 75% of that 15%
mm-hmm.
was, as per the decision-making of the researchers, qualified as less healthy items.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can imagine what that would mean. Like, in quotes, I'm saying, like, it's junk food, but it's probably food that's, like, less nutritious, possibly.
Sure.
Or, like, most people would judge as less nutritious.
Yeah.
Not that we need to vilify it, but... So this is pretty much consistent with what people would expect from New Year's resolutions. They actually also saw that the sales of healthy food increased by 29% after the holiday season. So now we're talking about the new year. So we have an almost 30% increase in healthy food sales in the new year. And this is a 19% increase from what was what had already increased during the holiday period, in December. In the new year, the sales of less healthy food remained at the same holiday level. So even though people were buying more healthy food, it's not like they were replacing what was categorized as the less healthy food. I know people can feel free to be mad at me for this, but like, this is just, you know, within the definitions of this research paper. Less healthy food versus healthy food. So they weren't replacing the less healthy food. They were just adding on more healthy food. So interestingly, even more than that, calories purchased each week, which again could mean a million different things, increased by about 10%. So in baseline calories were about 450, which ended up being around 890 calories in the new year. So it jumped like quite a bit,
right?
Per serving.
Okay, sorry. I was like, per week?
Per serving per week. Yeah, okay. Per serving per week. So there's a lot to... So that was a lot of numbers, and I'm sorry for that, but let's summarize what was happening. There's a lot to take into consideration here, I think. So what did we find? We found there was more spending on less healthy food in the holidays. We continued to spend that much in the new year on less healthy food, but we also were spending more on what would be categorized as healthy food. So something that wasn't taken into consideration here is obviously, okay, people are buying more, but maybe they're also hosting parties around this time of year, right? Or maybe for food bank donations, people are buying more food to donate. Like, it's a time of charitable giving, right? The research isn't perfect. I totally agree with that. No, this research is not perfect. No research is perfect. But it is an interesting peek into the consumership we have with regard to food at a time when a lot of people are intentionally making decisions that they consider to be healthy ones. And it's interesting, I think, that despite people making, you know, healthful New Year's resolutions, consumers are, you know, not replacing less healthy food with more healthy options, but in fact, they're continuing to purchase whatever is categorized as less healthy food, but adding more healthy food on top of it. So I thought that was really interesting. And I think, just like you were saying earlier, because messaging around diet culture is also, you know, increased around this time of year because people are making these New Year's resolutions, I wonder if that's also going in to contribute to influencing these decisions. So yeah, I guess, unfortunately, this research is kind of pointing out that there might possibly be this, like, we have a blind spot. We think we're contributing to our healthful goals, but in fact, maybe we're not observing our total behavior, you know, in a holistic manner. So I thought that was quite interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Like, that surprised me, honestly, that in the new year, I would have thought that people... My thought process is that people, like, want to, like, overhaul their lives, you know what I mean, in the new year. They're so regretful,
like, clean
about
up the cupboard
what they ate exactly in December and around the holidays that they feel the need to, like, totally stop buying the quote-unquote, like, unhealthy or less healthy foods and then, like, go 100% towards the healthy foods. So I don't know. It surprised me a little bit. I'm a little, like, confused.
I thought it'd be interesting also to look at what is really the number. Like, we talk about how it's very popular to make healthful decisions around the new year. So I really wanted to get kind of a number for that. And I didn't really find a perfect paper about it, but I did find one out of Stockholm University from 2017. This is actually an ongoing study, which I think is kind of cool. New Year's resolutions, a large scale randomized control trial. Like, who would have thought? But it does exist. They were looking at over 1,000 people's New Year's resolutions. This research is continuing to come out. But so far, what they've released is that over 70% of people are making resolutions that fall into the physical health category.
Wow.
So that's quite a lot of people. You know, out of that 1,000 at least, and who knows if they're representative of the whole world. probably not, but maybe representative of some communities or some populations. The second largest category is way lower. 10% is on self-improvement, which, I don't know, what does that mean? It could mean a million different things.
Sure. Yeah.
And actually, it seems like mental health is the smallest of these categories, or one of the smallest. At 5%, people are making these psychological health goals. And we've talked about this before, I think, and maybe we can dive into it more in an upcoming episode, because it's really interesting research that continues to come out that oftentimes disordered eating behaviors, rather than being tackled, we've actually talked about this a lot with respect to intuitive eating, rather than tackling certain food behaviors directly, tackling our mental health problems first and trying to fix our anxieties and our depression with therapy, with whatever other methods are necessary, with the recommendation of a medical professional. Mm-hmm. That is really the way to go first before trying to tackle certain food behaviors. And it's sad to see that psychological health is one of the least popular New Year's resolution goals. And it's way overwhelmed by the amount of people who are making physical health New Year's resolutions, at least in this study.
Yeah, I agree. That makes me sad too, to hear that. And I think more and more of us need to realize how psychological eating is, and how much our psychological health affects our physical health and our ability to pursue those physical health goals and do them in a healthy way, a way that's not sustainable, restrictive, a way that's sustainable, that doesn't lead us to yo-yo dieting or binge restrict cycles. So I agree. I think that addressing your mental health first, ideally, or at least with, the physical health goals, is so important.
I kind of want to give people a little, and this would be very anecdotal research, but just a little game in your head. When you're buying groceries, there's always that magazine rack, at least in large supermarkets, there's always that magazine rack next to the cashier. Count the number of magazines that you see, not individual copies, but the number of kinds of magazines, and then count how many of them, their covers are about diets, and see if, do it maybe a few times in January. And if you remember to do it again, do it a few times, later in the year, and see if, there was more messaging in the new year than there is later on. I'm really curious. I'm going to do this. And actually, we have the benefit of pre-recording this episode during the holiday season. So I'm going to start doing this myself before the new year comes around and see how this changes into 2021, because I'm quite curious.
Oh, I'm curious too. If I remember, I'll do it. But I don't have a great track record for remembering things that we're going to talk about on the podcast.
Even looking at how many of them in the new year have diet messages, I wonder if almost all of them will.
Yeah.
Rather than just a few of them.
Yeah. And let that make you a bit angry. Get mad at that and set, more sustainable non-diet related goals to combat that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were saying earlier, and I agree with you, setting goals can be really good for people. And if you don't set goals, whatever, that doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. But oftentimes I find I want to set goals, but I have trouble maybe following through on them completely.
Yeah.
Because maybe I make them too unrealistic. And I'm actually really happy I read some of these papers, because I'm going to try following some of this advice myself and see if I can do a bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving forward.
I mean, I will say it can be hard, especially if you're the kind of person that not following through or something like that drives you a bit makes you upset. Oh, it makes you feel like a failure.
Perfectionism.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'll say I was actually looking through the goals that I set for 2020 the other day, and I think I think I had five or six goals, and I really only stuck with or met one or two of them,
Do you think, and this is maybe an unfair question, but could you say if most of them were superordinate or subordinate?
I would say that They were probably, I think it was probably a mix actually. And you know what's funny is that the one of them that I met was actually like a superordinate goal, but I had set.
You probably made,
Like I had said, how are you going to achieve this? And then I wrote out like a bunch of almost subordinate things that would play into reaching the superordinate goal. But then the other one was just like a subordinate goal. So yeah, anyways, I just thought I was, you know, if you're like that as well, you know, it's okay as well to not meet all of them, but it's also, it's even if you didn't meet them, you still maybe did some work towards them or made some improvements. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
It's the thought that counts.
Yeah, totally. I agree. So, I want to jump right in. I'm kind of excited to talk about this, but so instead of talking about what's been tasty this week, Tarek suggested that we kind of chat about it, an end of 2020 like grocery list that he that he wrote out and he made up. So we're gonna like maybe we can do it kind of like not rapid fire, but we'll try to like know kind of bang through them. So there's a few things that we just want to like talk about. How we're feeling and check in with each other, how we're feeling about these things at the end of the year. Now, we encourage you to do the same thing at home. Maybe write it down while we're doing this. Grab a pen and paper or do it afterwards with a friend or family member or something like that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one I had on the list was on our grocery list. You know, as we're imagine you're walking around the store with a cart. You have your mask on.
Totally.
So the first thing on the list was movement because – I don't know. For me, this year has been really interesting because of the pandemic. I was so used to going to the gym last year. Like I was really enjoying it too. And it was so much fun that I really felt like I was just thrown off, like completely, like just completely thrown off. Cause I had such a happy ritual that, and honestly, I don't, even though some gyms are open, like I am not comfortable going during the pandemic.
No, me neither.
I don't want to go. And it's, even like not about me, but I don't want to spread COVID to other people potentially. So I have been having this kind of like up and down relationship with movement in trying to figure out how I can incorporate it in a way that's totally different from what I'm so used to.
Mm-hmm. Have you like, you know, at the end of 2020, is there anything that you found helpful or are you still kind of feeling your way through it and trying to,
okay. Yeah, I'm feeling my way through it.
Yeah, and that's okay. You know what? I think that you're definitely not alone in that 100%. Oh, yeah, sure, I'm sure there's so many people out there and probably people listening who can relate to that. And Well, now I've...
Yeah, what about you?
I feel like...
absolutely thriving. No, that's good. That's good. Yeah,
yeah, I feel a little bit silly now sharing mine, but I...
No.
You know what? I would say, like, at the start of 2020, Pat and I moved here to Moncton, and I actually, in the past, like, haven't really been a huge lover of going to the gym, and, like, I prefer sports and running and things like that.
Yeah.
But, I started going, like, I made myself almost like a gym routine when we moved here in February. And I was, like, trying out different classes at the gym here and stuff like that. And I was really enjoying it. And then, the pandemic happened and I haven't gone back since. But I honestly feel like I got into a really good home exercise, home workout routine.
Nice.
I find it helpful. I have like a workout app that I subscribe to, that I use, that I enjoy. And there's different types of workouts on there, all different types of workouts. And then just running, honestly, in the last few months, running has like been one of the only things that's made me like happy.
Miss it so much. Cause it feels so good.
Yeah.
And that's like what I am having this cognitive dissonance because I know I love it, but I'm not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels so
good. That's the struggle of 2020. But if you do get out there, like I will tell you, even though it's like cold out now, like almost getting out in the cold is so refreshing. And like it gives you a hit of like fresh air and movement, and especially the days are dark and kind of depressing these days. So I honestly, running has been like
the thing. You're
making
me want to go for a run.
You should go tomorrow. Yeah. So yeah, that's movement for me. Honestly, actually pretty good.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Do you want to start off with the next one?
Yeah. So the next one is some new recipes that we've tried. That's the next thing on the grocery list. So I'm trying to think back to some I guess I've tried quite a few new recipes this year. Early on in quarantine, it was kind of cute when I wasn't able to see my family because we weren't able to travel interprovincially in the Maritimes. My family and I started doing like FaceTime breakfasts every weekend. And so we would pick a recipe and then make it together on FaceTime. So like one weekend we did like a new frittata recipe. Another weekend we did this like raspberry cream cheese French toast recipe, different things like that. And that obviously, you know, since that was back in the spring time, we haven't done that because in the last few months I've been able to go home and visit them. But more recently, I've been just diving into cookbooks that I have at home. And there's a couple recipes off the top of my head I can think of that I really enjoyed. I made a vegetarian stuffed pepper recipe last week that was like super fresh, so good. It had like almost like
one of Princess Diana's favorite dishes.
Really? Who knew? Mm-hmm. The inside was like a mixture of black beans and fresh mango and cilantro and feta cheese and jalapenos. And like, it was so good in like grilled peppers. So good. So, that's one recently that I've really enjoyed.
I love that. I think I have two standouts. Okay. I mean, if you're a fan of the podcast, obviously, you know, I was obsessed with my summer salad.
Oh my God. Yes.
and the other thing that I really enjoyed was, which, like, the outcome was kind of meh, but I really enjoyed the whole idea and romanticism of it, was my pistachio cake.
Oh, yeah, you talked about that.
Because I really that was a really big thing for me.
I loved that.
That was like the recipe that I enjoyed
with
making.
The chocolate ganache. Do you put chocolate ganache
on it? Chocolate ganache, orange syrup, pistachio cake.
Yeah, that was good. And did you, so thank you developed that recipe, like, yourself?
No, I mixed together two different recipes.
Okay, cool. So you kind of,
yeah.
You made it your own.
I played around.
Yeah. I love that. It was delicious.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The next thing on our grocery list is, I don't know, it's stressful. Kitchen organization, which for me at least is kind of this. So I will say recently I reorganized, maybe let's say like just over a month ago. My spice rack is gore.
Really?
Just everything is like a new jar. Not everything's in new jars, but like things that need to be in jars are in jars. They're labeled. They're easy to access. My teas are not like falling over the place all over or whatever. The one thing that is like constantly an uphill battle for me is like the pantry cupboards. Because I in my mind, I say the pasta goes here, the beans go here, etc. But really, the pasta goes wherever I put it when I'm not thinking about it. You know what I mean?
So
that's kind of disorganized. But I will say the rest of the kitchen is pretty organized.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about you? I will say for this item on the grocery list and the next one, I just wrote one word for each of them. I just based on how I'm feeling about that specific
item. What's your
item.
One word for this one?
So my one word for kitchen organization is uncomfortable.
Okay, cool. I love that. Do you want to keep going on that or no? You just want to leave us hanging?
I am uncomfortable with the way my kitchen is organized right now.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I respect that.
You know,
what's your one word for fridge organization? That's the next one on our list is fridge organization. Yeah. What's that word?
Horrific.
Oh, wow. You know, okay, so I will say my really quick thing for fridge organization is, and for kitchen organization, is I bought some half shelves.
Oh, nice.
Like those half shelf racks, really cheap, like from the dollar store. And that's really helped me make use of space that was not used before.
That's a good idea.
The fridge, this is the problem with my apartment. I have a really small apartment and we don't have a full-size fridge. We don't have a full-size anything in the kitchen. The stove's not a full-size stove, etc. the fridge is not full size, which is really annoying. So things are kind of stuffed in there, but I know where everything is now, at least.
Right. Did you watch the Home Edit?
No.
Oh.
Is that Netflix?
Yeah, that was like, it had its couple weeks of popularity during, 2020.
I watched this video on from the New York Times on YouTube with Priya. She's one of the chefs at New York Times.
Okay.
And she had a professional organizer come in and reorganize her fridge. And I was like, I need to do this. So that's what kind of spurred it on.
Kind of like what the Home Edit is. It's like two professional organizers that just go into people's homes, some celebrities, some normal people. And
most privileged TV show ever.
For sure. But it is really satisfying to watch them organize.
Oh, totally.
And you get some organization tips as well. Okay, nice. So the next one is, this one's a bit dramatic for me as well. Takeout experiences.
Oh, yeah. Oh, please, you can start this one.
You want me to start? Okay, well,
yeah.
Pat can attest to this, but this is going to sound horrible, and I recognize that it is, but I cried on Saturday night because I was so tired of takeout food. Like, I was just I was just having a day, and
You know what I call that sometimes when I do that?
Yeah.
And when Thomas does that? I call it, you just need to perform. You just need to get it
That's what it was. I did. I needed to perform.
You were just performing.
I was having a performance evening, and
that's all it was.
I just was, like, dramatic, and I was tired of COVID and 2020, and I was like, I don't want to order takeout. I want to go to a restaurant and eat the food in the restaurant.
One woman show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I literally, tears were shed because I was tired of takeout. So that's, we've had a lot of takeout experiences this year.
Sure.
And, they've been all right, but you know what? I've come to find out that food just doesn't taste as good coming out of a box on your couch. I like the in-restaurant experience better.
There is something romantic about being in a restaurant. I also do think, like, being under my blanket on my couch in pajamas is also romantic. So it can go either way.
I'm over it. I'm done with that.
I have two really quick takeout experiences, a good one and a bad one. Maybe I'll give the bad one first.
Okay.
My bad one is that I used a certain app, and I was one of the people who got scammed, and the person literally, like, drives by your house and just takes the food and doesn't give it to you, but it looks like it arrived. And I had an arduous confrontation with the company to get my money back.
Oh my God.
They wanted to give me a credit to use their app again. I was like, I'm never using this app again.
No, yeah.
And my good takeout experience was actually at your house. We got that Soprasada pizza, and I loved it.
Yeah, you know what? They've done a good job, actually. Shout out to Gusto. Gusto Moncton. They've done a pretty good job.
Gusto.
Yeah.
Please message us, Gusto.
Yes, please.
So the final thing on the grocery list is misinformation. And I think the thing that I feel about misinformation is that every day I wake up and I think, this all seems so obvious. And then I find out that people really don't think so. Like, when it comes to masking, for example, or when it comes to, future COVID vaccine availability, people really don't want to listen to or trust the science. And shocking to me. I mean, every day I'm like, but it's like written in black and white, like, so obvious. Like, we need to mask. We should be vaccinating where possible, etc. But people are still up in arms.
I agree with that. And people are just so, I just feel like some people just love to be ignorant, and they love to be like, they just love it.
They love to, like, fight for a cause,
exactly,
whatever
a
it
cause
is,
that,
like,
really
regardless
doesn't
of whether
exist.
Or not they know anything.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly. So I'll say, I agree. I'm rattled.
People
about
love having an opinion.
Exactly.
Which, like, we have a podcast.
No, but I know what you mean. Like, people want to have an opinion and stand by it no matter what. And that
regardless of evidence or research or anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, one thing that I was going to say about misinformation is that I'm starting to get a little bit, this year, I've been really, like, exhausted by the amount of misinformation, around which, or not necessarily misinformation, but, like, the doubting of credible science-informed professionals. Like, you know, I've gotten that quite a bit. I've seen things on, like, you know, comments made on videos. This is why we can't trust dietitians anymore, or this is why, things like that. And then I also am, like, a bit rattled about, like, the misinformation or, like, the almost miscommunication between healthcare professionals as well. Like, I've almost, like, an example I'll give is, like, I talked about it in one of the BS of the Week segments about, like, the plastic surgeon talking about dairy.
The duet.
Yeah, and, like, how, like, we can't... There seems to be this disconnect between beliefs among even among healthcare professionals and like, what evidence is sound evidence and things like that. So, that's... anyways, that's negative. But I will say as well that I think one positive that's come out of it is that I feel like I'm getting, through the podcast as well, more and more comfortable and confident addressing it. And
Is a real, I agree with
Let's
that.
Let's end on that.
Because, like, we're doing the research. Yeah. So I feel like we have, like, the tools with which to comfortably defend certain scientific research.
Yeah.
Because we really have read it. Like, we really are informed in some ways.
Yeah. So that's the positive. That is a really positive. Yeah.
Happy new BS nutrition, everybody.
Happy new year.
Did that work?
Yeah, that did new BS nutrition. Happy 2021, everyone. Thank the Lord. Thank the...
Yeah.
Whatever.
Subscribe to us on... subscribe to us on Uber Eats. And, and make sure you... You know, everybody's getting free merch for the holidays. Just check your mail. I think everybody deserves free merch.
When we actually have
all our
merch.
Listeners. Yeah, all our listeners.
I think so too.
Yeah.
We love you guys. All right. Well,
shout out.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Subscribe. Leave us a rating and review. Follow us on social media. And we cannot wait to connect with you guys in 2021.
Tell us about your superordinate and subordinate New Year's resolution.
Yes. Share with us on social media.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys.